The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So for those of you who don't know me, I'm Diana Clark. I'm a substitute teacher sometimes for Gil and Andrea. And I also teach on Wednesdays here, part of the happy hour, and various other things you'll see on the calendar. So, not too long ago, I was teaching an introduction to meditation mindfulness class here. And I surprised myself with, like, sometimes this happens, right? Things that come out of one's mouth. And I described as one of the benefits of meditation or meditation practice as radical contentment. The more I thought about it, the more I thought that's actually kind of the experience. This word radical is kind of, it feels radical to me in two different ways. One is that it's so different than kind of maybe what we often hear about or what the media is talking to us about, or radical in that it's such a alternative, so very different than kind of the usual way that we experience ourselves or the way that we label our experiences. This idea of radical contentment, too, is also very deep, like very meaningful. Like it's not just kind of like, oh yeah, that was nice kind of a contentment, but a very, I keep on using this word, deep. So meditation, maybe you all know this yourself. I've had this experience where meditation can help us have moments of deep contentment, when even if it's just for a moment, where we don't feel like we need to change anything. We don't feel like we have to like express something. We don't feel like we have to run away from something. Or we don't feel like we have to invest some special meaning into our experience. Instead, just this sense of settledness, this sense of, yeah, it's okay. This is good. Or it's good enough in the sense that maybe it's not fireworks and loud music, you know, but this sense of, yes, okay, here I am. Here's this experience. So it can be a sense of satisfaction, a sense of being settled, a sense of not being agitated with wanting more, more, more. I was really struck by this as I was driving here this evening on 101. There's this billboard that it's one of those electronic billboards that changes. And today I had this new advertisement on it that I hadn't seen before. And giant letters was M-O-R-E, more, right? And I thought to myself, yeah, okay, that kind of sums it up, right? You know, the season here in December and this kind of the consumerist society that we find ourselves in. There's a sense that we need more, or you have to be more, or gain more, or get more, or do more. Or I don't know what it is, just more. I'm trying to remember what the advertisement was on the billboard. I'm not even sure I remember, right? It was just this idea of more. And of course, contentment is a type of happiness, too. Maybe it's not like the usual happiness that we think of. Sometimes when we think of happiness, it has more of like a bubbly sense or a more energetic feel, whereas contentment is more of kind of like a settled feel. And sometimes like happiness more in the everyday English, not as much in kind of like the Buddhist teachings, but in everyday English, happiness is often associated with getting what we want. Oh, I'm so happy that the traffic wasn't too bad getting here. I'm so happy that X happened. I'm so happy that Y didn't happen. Whereas contentment is a little bit more about with not wanting in the first place. Contentment is a little bit more about feeling like there doesn't need to be more. It could be an absence of craving, absence of feeling like we need something else than what's actually happening. So whereas happiness and kind of the conventional ways often associated with getting with what we want, contentment is more about just a shift in perspective. It's not like we have to suddenly acquire something, have ownership of something, or get rid of something. It's more just changing our view. Like, oh yeah, this is okay. This is what's here is enough. So some things that contentment are not, it's not like just putting up with, yeah, okay, this is good enough. It's all I'm going to get. I might as well just, I guess I'm satisfied with this. It's not that. It's not putting up with. It's not tolerating, like, okay, well, this is all that's going to happen. And it's not being passive, like, okay, this is just how it is. Contentment is more of the absence of craving, this letting go, or maybe a softening. I can use that word, softening. Maybe the craving that we often experience, or this clinging, or this sense things aren't quite right, has softened in a certain, in a degree that helps us feel, to kind of relax into the moment and experience what's happening. But sometimes this idea of contentment can feel like a booby prize, right? It's like, well, okay, if you're not really happy, I may as well just be content with this. And there may be a certain amount of resistance to contentment, especially if we're find ourselves kind of like filled with really wanting something. This idea, well, you should be content with what you have, right? It doesn't feel like something that's nourishing, and it doesn't feel like, in fact, it can sound horrifying. Oh, just be content. But in fact, it is nourishing, contentment and nurturing. Or if we're accustomed to grumbling and complaining, then this idea of being content can feel like a failure, like, oh, maybe I can't complain in the way that we usually do. I can say I've spent a lifetime doing a lot of complaining. And I realize, oh, this is just a habit. I actually, things are fine. What a radical idea to kind of put away this idea of complaining and grumbling. Or if we find ourselves often filled with aversion towards other people or the situation, this idea of contentment can feel like, I don't want to be content. It can feel like I'm letting people get away with something. So we can learn something about ourselves if we have this resistance to this idea of contentment. Do we have this habit? Are we invested in? Do we think that we're going to find some really lasting sense of happiness if we really cultivate some more of this wanting more or pushing away or complaining? So we can learn a little bit about ourselves if we look into what is some of our resistance to contentment. And of course, when we're under the enchantment of craving, right? Just like this billboard is telling us more, it's so easy to fall into this and to think that things need more. Right? We're bombarded with these messages all the time. Why, it might be interesting to notice, I use this word like enchantment with craving or clinging or wanting more. Because when we're really under the spell of wanting more, there can be seem like whatever we want is somehow is like sprinkled with this fairy dust that, okay, I know that everything else wasn't quite enough, but this one thing, as soon as I get this one thing, it's going to be enough. Or somehow, as soon as that other thing happens, it'll be sufficient. If we really look at it, we might realize that that's probably not the case, but that's often not the feeling. We're not really looking clearly. It's more just a feeling like, oh yeah, just this one more thing. But what does it feel like to not be driven or dominated by this craving? What does it feel like to just settle back and to say, okay, yeah, this is enough? There's freedom there, actually. There's freedom to not be pushed around by this incessant feeling of more. And also cravings often arise, or clingings, this idea that we need more, arise from this sense of insufficiency. Either I am not enough, or I don't have enough. But we are enough. And chances are that we have enough in some basic kind of way. Kind of the Buddhist teachings emphasize the simplicity, and in order to support this feeling of contentment, which is a kind of an absence of agitation, you know, this absence of trying to get something that we don't yet have. But we can ask ourselves, well, what in this moment is truly lacking? Like, just in this moment, right now, just, you know, this one moment. And we can inquire into, what do we believe we need? What are our beliefs about what's needed, what we need? Can we do with less? Can we honor our commitments to non-harming? Sometimes this incessant need for more leads to harming the environment, harming other people, harming ourselves. Maybe we feel discomfort with this idea of having less. Is it okay? Is it okay to feel this discomfort? So what views do we have associated with this idea? Well, maybe I don't need more. Maybe with what I have is okay. But if you do this inquiry, you may discover that there's a lot of protestations in this idea, like, no, I definitely need more. I definitely need more. That's okay too. We have been conditioned to have this idea of wanting more, and there's some kind of this evolutionary biological drive to want more, right? This kind of biology doesn't want us to just be completely satisfied and sitting on our haunches, sitting around all day. But returning to what contentment is not, it's not this, as I said, this passively accepting everything as it is. In fact, kind of like a key Buddhist teaching is to recognize and understand and notice the difficulties and the sufferings that we have in our life. But the practice is not to only like notice like, oh, all the suffering and all the difficulty, but to also notice contentment. So can this be the practice that we have a balance between kind of wise discontentment and wise contentment? What are the things that require some attention, require us to put some energy towards, require us to practice with in order to make changes? And what are the times and when are the occasions and the experiences in which we can practice contentment? So it's not an either or, it's kind of a spectrum. And part of the practice is to learn this and to become familiar with what can we be okay with? What do we need to take care of and put some energy towards? And so how can we meet our difficulties and notice the reality of the moment and notice the things that aren't quite right? and have that balanced with a sense of contentment that allows us to hold it when things aren't quite right. And can we know the fact that there's a practice, kind of a meditation practice, daily life practice, that can help us, that can support us when we are seeing the difficulties, when we are seeing the suffering? So that can there be some contentment and knowing that there's a way in which we can work with and meet with difficulties? So what are some of the things that we can do to support the arising of contentment? I kind of like started the talk saying that I was using it to describe meditation. I think it just naturally happens as the mind starts to settle, then there's a little bit more room for contentment. There's a little bit less agitation, greater sense of well-being, often. Not always, right? Anybody who has a meditation practice knows that's not always the case. But we to be mindful, meditation also helps us to be mindful of our desires, this wish to have more. And we can understand that, okay, well, maybe some, when is it appropriate to satisfy certain desires and when is it appropriate to not satisfy certain desires? When is it appropriate to step back from them, this wish to have more, and to allow the agitation, whatever contraction we're feeling around it, to settle and to relax? Meditation also can help us discover how can we be at ease without this grip of wanting, wanting, wanting. A second way that we can support contentment is to kind of redefine wealth. Conventionally, it has to do with our bank accounts or things that we own, acquisitions. But in the Buddhist teachings, and perhaps it's true in your own life too, it certainly is true in my life, that beautiful states of mind, having beautiful, including contentment, having happiness, joy, calmness, there is some real wealth there, right? To be able to know that these states of mind are possible, may not be able to have access to them all the time, but to even have experienced them, that's something that's really can really support us, nurture and nourish us, these kind of beautiful states of mind, concentration, mindfulness, being present with what is, acting, behaving in an ethical way. This is part of wealth also. Another key Buddhist teaching is that can support the arising of contentment is teaching of simplicity, renunciation, kind of relinquishment. Not as a form of asceticism that we have to give up all of our worldly belongings and have to go sit in a cave for weeks, months, years, something like this, but just as a way that supports a mind to not be agitated, to help create the conditions in which we, as a more simple existence, a more simple life, helps create the conditions in which our mind isn't so agitated. Always trying to fix everything, get everything right, get more, take care of this. I remember a friend of mine, he said something to me that actually had such a big impact. Just this casual thing. Somebody had given him a gift. I don't now remember what the gift was. And it was something that he really wanted and appreciated. I was happy to receive it. But then sometime later he noticed, you know, all these things, they have to be maintained. Like this thing needs to be batteries, that thing needs to be updated, this thing needs to be cleaned, this other thing needs to be, is broken, and now I have to fix it, and this other thing, I don't like it anymore, now I have to give it away. He was just commenting, like, you know, even though I appreciate having these things, I never noticed before the cost that's associated with them. And that just really made me look at the things that I own, and like, oh yeah, I have to store them, I have to find a place to put them, and you know, these things that we end up like acquiring, they do have a little tax on them. They're not as free if they're given to us, or maybe the cost is a little bit higher than we often assume. So a simple life is about not just accumulating more and more and more, because we may not initially notice what is the cost, what is the tax on having all these things. But renunciation or simplicity can also, we can consider it as a fewness of wishes. Like, yeah, okay, this is enough. I don't have the latest this. I don't have the greatest that. But it's okay. I don't have this. The other day I wanted to this was for Thanksgiving. I wanted to fix something for my family. And I thought, well, maybe I'll make something that I hadn't made before. Looked at some recipes. I came up with some ideas, something I wanted. And then one of the steps in the recipes, I don't have a lot of experience cooking, maybe I should say this as a introduction. But one of the instructions was, in the Cuisinart, do X, Y, or Z. I'm like, oh, I don't have a Cuisinart. Oh no, maybe I can't make this recipe, but I kind of like it. I wanted to make it. And I was talking to a friend of mine, and he said, Diana, you have a knife. Oh, yes. Right? Sometimes just we don't need as these things that often we might think that we do. That was a great, and it was actually quite fun. I just put a little podcast on. Actually, it was a Dharma talk. I was listening to a Dharma talk, and I just, me and my knife, and I just dropped things, and it was actually quite pleasant. So just kind of a reminder, right? So sometimes we have these things that we want, and we don't necessarily need them. If we have them, we can appreciate them, take care of them, honor and respect them. But it doesn't mean that our life is going to be better just by accumulating more and more and more. Most of us have, most of us in this room, I reason to guess we have enough shelter, food, clothing, access to medical supplies. These are the requisites, these are the that the Buddha suggested for his monastics. Saying, as long as you have these things taken care of, then you don't need much more. So his the Buddha's teaching on contentment was to focus on these four requisites and then just simplify your life so that we don't spend our times continuously thinking about, being agitated by what we need. So there might be some more contentment available to us than we are already experiencing if we think about what we do have. Instead of being pushed around by what we need. So in some ways, gratitude is a practice that can really support this sense of contentment. If you look at the scientific literature on happiness, interestingly, they say gratitude practice is the one that most reliably and consistently creates the conditions for people to feel happier, to have a regular gratitude practice. So I think probably many of us have heard of this idea of, well, you know, at the end of the day, write down a few things, three things, that you feel gratitude. I started this practice maybe I don't know, it's been a little, some time now, I learned quite a few things about myself. You might learn some things about yourself too, and you, if you think back on the day, well, what do I have gratitude for? What am I grateful for? For me, I noticed how important some relationships were, the relationships that I were taking for granted. When I started to think about what was really meaningful and helpful and supportive and lovely and beautiful, it was often a conversation I had with somebody, or just the opportunity, like receiving an email or exchanging, you know, and there was some heartfelt goodness in the email, you know, some wish, I hope you're doing well, those types of things. So a gratitude practice can really be supportive for not only contentment, but just for happiness in general. But something, some other things, so the scientists look at, okay, well, what helps cultivate gratitude now that they've seen this link between gratitude and happiness? They say that one thing is to remember the bad. It's a little bit about kind of the Buddhist practice too of, you know, we're not denying that difficulties happen. We're not denying that there's suffering. But sometimes it might be helpful to remember that we have experienced difficult times. That we have had difficulties. Maybe we are at this moment experiencing difficulties too, but maybe there have been other difficulties that we've found our way through, and we can be grateful that we're not experiencing that particular one at this moment. Sometimes when we remember how difficult life used to be or how far we've come, we can the contrast in our mind helps us to feel grateful. Oh yeah, okay, this is not so bad. Another practice that can help support the sense of gratitude is this mental subtraction of positive events. To think about, okay, well, what are some of the good things that have happened? And how would my life be today if that thing didn't happen? Whatever that thing might be. It can be a giant thing about relationships we have, education we have, or have had, jobs we have, or have had. Maybe sometimes, you know, to think about, well, how would my life would be different if those things didn't occur? That might kind of also help support this sense of gratitude. Another thing about gratitude is to notice the language that we use. People who feel gratitude often are using the words like, in their everyday language, using words like gift or giver or blessings or blessed or fortune or fortunate or abundance. Just having these words in our vocabulary or hearing others say them can kind of help support this sense of, oh yeah, it is a blessing, however you understand that word, to have this experience, to have this relationship, to have whatever it might be, this weather. So in gratitude practice, rather than kind of focusing on the goodness that we have, it may be on the good things that others have done. It can be kind of things that are external. So this idea of contentment, in some ways, I was thinking about this because around the new year, there's often, right, this practice of New Year's resolutions. Sometimes New Year's resolutions are born out of this idea of what's wrong, what we have to fix, what's not good enough. So maybe this time of year, we can acknowledge everything that we have already have, things we've already done. Instead of what needs to be done. So instead of coming from the sense of lack, I don't have enough, I'm not enough, things are insufficient, we can cultivate a sense of contentment. What has worked well? What is working? And then approach the new year of like, okay, how can I create the conditions to support those things that are working? As opposed to this idea of, okay, here we go, the annual resolution, I'm going to diet more, or sorry, eat better, exercise more, meditate more, kind of the usual, the usual list that we often have. This idea of contentment is a way to kind of help us take care of ourselves. Notice what we do have. Not pretend that the difficulties in our lives don't exist. And not to kind of like be Pollyannish. But just to allow the mind to be less agitated, to settle down and to experience the freedom and the ease that's possible, right? Because it's not possible. It's not possible to satisfy all of our desires. It's just not possible. Even though we may often be trying, and right, and we may feel like we're on a treadmill with this, however, it is possible. It is possible to let go of desires, to have them push us around, to have them make us feel contracted or agitated. Part of this practice is to help tap into that, the place where the desires aren't pushing us around, or where they're very soft, or maybe even have just completely gone. And instead, there's this feeling of contentment, this feeling of well-being, this feeling of happiness. And in this radical way, when we see these billboards that are saying more, we can just say, no, thank you. I already have enough. So maybe I'll end there. And I'll open it up to see if there's some questions or comments. Thank you.
It was requested that I recite a couple of raps that I made about some of the teachers here. So
before you do that, Ethan, let's just see if anybody has a comment on this, and then we'll kind of like wrap up this part of the evening. And
sure.
Then,
sure.
Can someone achieve enlightenment with only contentment?
What if enlightenment is contentment? No, I think you're pointing to that we absolutely, there's this desire that overcomes all other desires. And there is a desire for more freedom. There is a desire for more, I'll just say this word, more freedom, desire for enlightenment or something like this. And that doesn't, that's kind of like under, maybe underlies working with contentment too, right? It's the desire that helps create the conditions for to let go of desires. But this desire for enlightenment is with us, I think, until we're enlightened. Is this what your question is? Is something like this?
somehow I feel suffering is a, it just adds more enlightenment into our life one way or another. It's a lesson that's just waiting for us to learn. And if we take that part away and we just really dive into, I guess, a universe of just contentment, I mean, happiness and contentment and joy, is there space for us to learn?
Oh, I see. Yes, yes, I understand. Yeah, so I didn't emphasize this, but I did talk about this wise discontent by working with our suffering. But I feel like we also need to nourish and support ourselves and to experience the freedom that is available to us when there is the when there's less agitation. Then we can see the deeper and the more subtle suffering that we have. So we definitely, and there's no getting away from suffering, right? It just doesn't, it's not possible. But we can shift our relationship with it, and we can also counter it with some, I keep on using this word nourishing and support. So there's a type of healing that also that can happen if we can allow ourselves to feel some contentment and happiness. But, right, let's not pretend that you can feel this like all the time. Right, there's difficulties arise, but I think the more that we have the experience of some contentment and we know that that's available, that kind of also not only this nourish and healing, but also gives us confidence in which to be with difficulties. Like, okay, I know that it's possible to have a different experience. I'm not experiencing it right now, but I know it is possible to feel some radical contentment. It also, when we're feeling this, the ease or the spaciousness of contentment, in that place, there can be, there's this lack of agitation, there can be this room for, to bubble up some wisdom, some deeper understanding that often we, it's not available if we're like just trying to work with the suffering. We're just trying to be with the difficulty that takes our energy and our attention. But sometimes when there's this openness that's available, when that we're not directly working with that, then there's can be some insights can arise and some things like this. So there's definitely room for both. And I guess tonight I was emphasizing more this kind of absence of craving and this absence of more as contentment, just because this time of year, there's so much a sense, for me at least, I have this idea of like, more consumerism and New Year's resolutions. It's kind of, for me, I feel like the message I'm getting is to be discontented. And it's like, no, I kind of wanted to like counter that and balance it. So was that helpful? Yes, okay. Yes, so. I think you probably have to turn that on.
Is it working?
Yeah, there you go.
So I've been struggling with the idea of contentment in that I am afraid that if I become more content, then I will lose motivation to reach my goals. And it's something I've been thinking a lot about. And it's not that I'm, it's not my goals being, not material things. And I feel the more content I become, the more happy I feel, but I also feel afraid that I'm going to lose my drive to reach my goals.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. This is, not uncommon that, I read this book a few years ago. What was it called? 10% Happier. And it's about this very thing. Who's somebody who wants to meditate, but he feels like he doesn't want to lose his professional edge. He feels like this, having this drive to keep on going. Yeah, so what happens, I think that two things. As I was mentioning, with there's a certain amount of settledness and contentment. We can see things with a little bit different perspective. Often there's some wisdom that can arise where we can see what is the best way to do whatever needs to be done. Instead of doing it the way that's the habitual way of doing it, or doing it the way that's the easiest, often we can say, well, is there a way that I can do this that supports myself and supports others and gets this done? So a way that we can approach, there's lots of things we want to do professionally, educationally, with our family, whatever it might be. But can we do it in a way that's with openness and spaciousness and with and kind of open-handedness, instead of like a, oh, I got to get this done, kind of a contracted type of feeling? So this, it is possible to do this. Absolutely, I can speak from experience. It's just the it's just the motivation to get things done is a little bit, maybe the same thing happens. Well, I'll just use, you know, work, for example, but the motivation can be different. Instead of fear-based or I want to need more or whatever it is, we can see like, oh, it's the right thing to do. It's the right next thing to do, and to do it from that way, which has a little more spaciousness and ease and freedom in it. But I want to kind of like utter and respect what you're saying. You're certainly, you're not the only one that is saying this. We've been conditioned to think that we need to be, I don't know what we think we need to be necessarily, but certainly not content, right, in order to make things happen. Was that a helpful kind of, yeah, so you can just try it in a little bit, maybe not. I think maybe what you'll discover is we may have this idea that we'll sit on the couch, eat bonbons all day if we're content. Whatever bonbons are, I'm not sure. But you'll discover that in fact that's not what happens. It's like, oh, yeah, now is the time I'm going to do this. That thing that I didn't want to do, well, it feels like now's the right time to do it. So these things kind of will bubble up. Yes, so a comment back there.
You mentioned that you think it's impossible to completely escape suffering. And could you elaborate on that? And do you mean even in the most enlightened minds?
Oh, so I didn't mean escape suffering. That, I believe, is absolutely possible. I do believe enlightenment's possible. I think what I said, what I meant to say, it's not possible to satisfy all our desires. Right? Our desires are like infinite. And like, we often even have conflicting desires. So, I mean, it's just not possible. And yet we often, that's kind of what motivating us, and we kind of like, without examining it clearly, we might have this idea. But I do believe that enlightenment is possible. And desire is a place where there isn't any, enlightenment is a place where there isn't any desire. So that's what I was trying to point to. It is possible to not have desire, to let go of our desires, not to keep on feeding them and trying to satisfy them. That's not possible. To satisfy all of them. You're welcome. Okay, so it's now 9:00. So for those of you who'd like to go, you can. Ethan's going to do a rap song. So maybe we'll stop the recording here. And Ethan's going to... No, we can do a separate recording that's not on the end of my evening here. We can decide what to do with that. So for those of you who'd like to stay, Ethan has a rap song for two of our teachers here. I think Ethan has some talent here, and it's kind of fun. It's a little bit something different. But if you'd like to go, I kind of want to allow people to go too. So we can maybe hear what Ethan has to say about Max Ernstein and Gail Fronstahl.